Hi there, and welcome back to the Energy Sector Heroes podcast. My name is Michelle Fraser, and every week I will speak with incredible people who share their lessons, experiences, and stories from their time spent in the energy sector. Hi there, and welcome back again to this week's episode. If you're new to the show, then please take a second to subscribe and even consider sharing the show with just one other person. This week, I am joined by Elvin Mamadov. Elvin is the founder and president at Opla Energy. Elvin, would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Michelle. I'm Elvin Mamadov. Like you said, I'm currently president and a founder board of directors of Opla Energy, which is managed pressure drilling company across the North America, which means Canada and US. At the moment, we're operating in two countries.
Okay. So how did you get started off in an energy sector then?
My bachelor degree is in petroleum engineering. So I was always in oil and gas, basically by studying school and then always, you know, hoping and envisioning and see myself in oil and gas industry. So indeed, I did bachelor degrees in petroleum engineering and master's in mechatronics, which is mechanical and electronics in Toronto, Canada. And then about 2010, I moved to Calgary, Alberta, which is the oil and gas state or province of Canada, and started in oil and gas as in D&M, drilling and measurement, as a field drilling engineer.
Okay. So what made you go into drilling rather than the process?
Honestly, I think that what most excites me and still does even in the different roles and always been is because the drilling is underground. It's always unknown. So you're always faced with unexpected, and it needs a creativity and problem solving skills to be able to figure out the things, because you can't touch, you can't see. All you have to do is just, you know, it's like same as a space industry. So you've never been there, but you're engineering something that, you know, based on your historical data and based on your knowledge and skills. And I think it's pretty exciting.
Is it difficult to drilling to be, because it is a very demanding job. It's a very hard labor job as well. But is it quite difficult to do the drilling then?
It is. I mean, it depends on, you know, of course, the fields, if it's the mature fields or if it's the exploration fields. So basically, I love the most exploration fields and since the beginning of my career, because it has a lot of more unknowns than regular fields. But definitely needs the full attention skills. And with today's industry that, you know, it's a very demanding for performance base, because, you know, everybody is racing and trying to make sure that, you know, if we used to drill in 30 days the well, that we can achieve in 9 days now. So, and technology is moving on. So that's the most exciting part of it.
So does it take less time to drill now then?
Of course, because technology has improved. And there's a lot of technology leaders. And I think that's the most exciting time in oil and gas and energy sector today, because there was a booming period for oil and gas that, you know, everybody was profitable enough all the time not to change and not to innovate, not to do anything, but just continue as it is, because, you know, regardless, it's always profitable. But when the time came that, you know, oil prices start fluctuating, especially the last 15 years, I want to say that there's a huge competition in technology and there's a lot of advancement in every area of oil and gas, I want to say, but definitely drilling is the leading on that, because it's the primary and very first operations, and it has to be.
I was going to ask you maybe something quite controversial. Do you think that drilling is still, do you think a lot of companies are still drilling now, considering we've got all this talk about the net zero, to try and get the net zero down?
Well, it's kind of something that, you know, very political view that there's not much I can share on that as a energy company CEO. But however, the media and data shows the other way around, of course, right? So I was last year in London on the World Drilling Conference, and Rystart Energy shared really cool chart that, you know, it's shown that just the investment perspective, how much per year the fossil fuel investment is increasing versus renewable. And it was an interesting graph, and it was shown based on the temperature of the world when it comes to net zero, and shown that how much the investment, well, investment means that if the more money has been invested, it means more wells being drilled in fossil fuel energy. That's the, how we interpret it in that graph, but not necessarily exactly the same understanding, but at least it shows the good trend. So I think it's getting challenging. We're drilling in more deeper wells in today's world, and more hot wells, basically, you know, what we call it HPHT, and more challenging wells. So that's why the technology improvement or enhancement is becoming a must at this point.
Okay. So for a younger audience, what is a hot well and why, what makes them so challenging?
Like I said, I mean, there's been huge competition since 1950s, you know, drilling practices versus in 20s practices. So that there's a lot of technology like Adopt Energy. We've invented a number of new inventions like IoT now being implemented now in our industry. Machine learning, artificial intelligence, you know, next generation drilling equipment designs been, you know, launched. Like we are leading one in managed pressure drilling, but it is not only the managed pressure drilling. So there's directional, there's recontractors, there's top drives, and all kind of different aspects of the drilling is continuously and parallelly improving to achieve the better. And that reduce the cost of the drilling, of course. And at the same time, increase the performance and safety overall, and overcomes the more challenging wells. So that actually unlocks at the same time to drill the more challenging wells.
Okay.
That was possible to do in 1950s or 30s or 60s or even 1990s at some point.
Okay. Do you think that AI will have quite a big impact on the drilling?
Of course. I mean, AI is all over right now. We at the Opal Energy, we have already have initiated number of AI products, and we're running in the field. For example, you know, in managed pressure drilling, we operate the chokes to control the bottom hole pressure constantly. That used to be controlled by human, the choke positions. So it's basically, you know, to not to get into more technical, but there's rig pump and there's your choke. So you're decreasing or increasing the rig pump, and your choke has to, you know, move accordingly. If it's increasing, it needs to decrease. If it's decreasing, it needs to increase the position. And just like how every, you know, driller were playing with his pump, and then, you know, there was an MPD operator playing his choke now, but now it does actually completely controlled by the AI, and it's shown a superior performance.
Okay.
So on the non-linear choke algorithm, PNID technology, that we own the patent on that. So aside that, I mean, we currently have about three different AI, either supportive products or the main products running in the field, which we own the patents on most of them. And we're leading on managed pressure drilling side ourselves.
Okay.
So it's coming. It's on its way. It's nothing bad. It's nothing to be scared. It doesn't replace anyone's job. It's just changing, reforming the shape of people's job. And then making more skillful and thoughtful jobs than, you know, labor jobs. But of course, it's just, you know, from the business perspective, it makes it more profitable from the business perspective, because you can achieve more with less people.
Okay. How can you achieve more with less people?
Well, put it this way. If you have the 5 vehicles, and you can only get the 5 drivers, and you can only employ 5 drivers, and you can just operate 5 vehicles and in a manual way. But the moment you power them with artificial intelligence, doesn't need driver, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't need the operation center. So now you can operate 10 vehicles or 15 vehicles or n number of vehicles from the operating center by the subject matter experts of 5 or 6. So still the same driver sitting in front of the computer, not in the vehicle. So that's exactly what we're doing. So not necessarily we have moved 100% of our operations to unmanned or remotely controlled, what we call it. It's still manned. That's why we never use unmanned words. It's a pretty hot keyword now in oil and gas, but I'm completely against to it. I mean, it's still the human that operates from the operation center. So what we call it is ROC, remote operation center, that we operate those technologies with the same amount of people, but more drilling, you know, fields or more drilling rigs that, you know, that gets controlled from the operation center with the same people and same expertise required. But you don't have to be there now because AI is assisting to do the job in the field for you.
Okay. That's interesting. So how would a new graduate get into the drilling sector if that's what they wanted to do?
I mean, I'm going to share my own definitely the thought and perspective. And it doesn't mean that it's the right thing, but that's what I'm visioning, that where the world is evolving now or technologies. Of course, you know, if you're a mechanical, chemical, and petroleum engineer, to get into the drilling industry, those are the best three, the degrees or school that you need to start as a drilling engineer in oil and gas sector. But now a lot of technology is changing. You know, there's IoT, there's AI, there's ML, there's data analytics. There's a lot of, you know, analytics is happening because the shape of the business, shape of the doing the things has been changed. Now you require a programming skills. So it is huge asset in any position now in I think not only the drilling industry, but anywhere else to be able to understand and you know, automate your own process as an engineer so you can achieve faster and better results and more precise results. So it is still conventional, traditional way. If you're asking, so how we do at our club, I mean, we just probably have, if we go on a website, there's a fresh graduate job posting because we do support for the new grads and you know, new generation that, you know, comes in and learns into, you know, blended version of the operations. So we still, you know, things that is as it is, used to be, and new way of doing the things is also being created. So they come in on board and you know, not required any special skills other than that their degrees and their motivation. But once they started, if they're capable of learning, we load them up with a lot of new skills in our own industry.
Okay. That sounds amazing. Is there still quite a lot of opportunities in drilling, though?
100%, and it's got the wave in the opportunities with the oil and gas, you know, industry. But I think that, you know, with today's opportunities is definitely way more better than the 15 years or 20 years ago's opportunity, I want to say.
Do you think so? I thought it would have been the other way around. Because especially with the boom time when there was, when a lot of organizations were drilling.
Yeah, but it's more sustainable, I want to say. I mean, when there's a booming and it's just that human resources required so much that you get hired and positions used to be changed so fastly without, you know, what's that called? How should I say it? I mean, without the stone falls into the right spot, you know what I mean? But now it is more controllable and it's more precise and accurate for the fresh graduates to start and scale and learn and get better and then do better for the companies and position themselves into where they actually enjoy the most, you know, when it comes to a skill-wise or job-wise or position-wise, and grow out of there. And you know, the leadership has been changed. There's new generation, young leaders have been in that industry. So their vision has been changed. And so it creates the great opportunity for the fresh graduates at this point, I want to say, compared to our times, I want to compare.
Have you ever had any career disasters?
What do you exactly mean?
Well, have you had any challenging times during your career?
Of course. I mean, well, to go back to my career, like I said, I worked for 2 years in D&M with, you know, one of the top four companies in oil and gas service, oil field services. And then after that, I switched over to managed pressure drilling just 2 years after. And then I did a lot of various positions in in my previous company called Weatherford, which is, you know, at that time, the leading managed pressure drilling company. So I started as a field engineer and team lead, engineering manager, you know, business development, you know, business unit manager or so on. And I've evolved my, you know, the titles and accountabilities and job skills requirement. But eventually in 2019, when I quit and I founded Oplay Energy, it was a 5-people company. It was backed by Citadel Drilling. We raised significant amount of funds to do the research and development to, you know, reshape the managed pressure drilling industry by inventing the, you know, technology that today we use called the PMD pressure management device. So we were converting the 3 loads of traditional package, like when I say load, the semi-trail loads, to a coffee table size, basically, and the most smartest technology in our industry, which means that it's powered by AI, it's a fully automated, and so on and so on. Of course, we did with the staggered stages of the proven technologies, but in 2020, of course, the COVID hit, and that was the most challenging and stressful time of our company, and as well as my own career, I want to say. Back to your question. So oil prices hit the minus 40 for a couple of days. The world closed down. You know, nobody knows what's going to happen next, and nobody knows how long it's gonna carry like this. Is it 10 years of lockdown or 10 days? So that was the, as a president of the company, that was the most stressful and challenging. And for my own career, that was the most stressful and, you know, a problematic the period of my time, because we're creating a technology to prove in the field, but, you know, we don't know what's going to happen next. But luckily, here we are. And I will say internally at Opla, if we're a team that made it through those COVID, I think our resilience is pretty high.
I think so too, because I have heard of quite a lot of companies who haven't made it through COVID. So
yeah, it's so unfortunate. Really well. Yeah, it's so unfortunate. Like you said, it's the economy was different, and, you know, there was no light end of the tunnel at the beginning of the COVID. Nobody was, you know, investors and buyers and vendors or clients. Everybody was afraid what's going to happen next. So nobody was taking any move for a little time of that period. Like, you know, I want to say 6 months or 8 months of the oil and gas until it just got back on and continue drilling as usual and grown out of it.
Okay. So what made you decide to create your own business then?
It was pretty, I mean, like I said, like 7 years ago or 8 years ago when I started, 7 years or 8 years ago of my career with Weatherford, first time I stepped on a drilling site location, I just looked around and it was like, I found that everything, all the technologies outdated, is too much of the technology, too much of the 3 semi-loads of trailers and packages and. It was obvious, like, somebody's going to do a better. So I think that one of the things that we have failed as the leaders in oil and gas is, like I mentioned before, when it's profitable, no one wants to touch the working thing. So saying like, well, it's profitable, let's move on. So, but eventually there's going to be a small startup companies get backed by, you know, investors or maybe it's the bootstrapper. So who knows how it's going to be, but somebody's going to break through a new technology and shake up the market. So back to your question. Yeah, I felt it. I think I felt that it could be done better. But again, I was young and I was a field engineer, not into a business side of it or so. But, you know, I had the opportunity to work in different aspects of the business as an engineer and operations and management, sales, you know, and then, you know, the unit manager or so on, and that created the, you know, that completed the big bird eye view or the big puzzle for me that, well, you know what, it's an opportunity for me to, you know, turn up to the what I'm visioning in my mind to the reality. So then I just decided that I think the visions are not matching going forward. So, you know, most of the companies at that time scaling down the technology and sort of investing more in R&D. So making it more simplified and cheaper, but the less performing technology. So I was thinking, and I'm still thinking other way around. So it's always smarter to invest and automate and do better every day of your own, you know, versions, basically. And then, you know, make it more profitable, more scalable, and more agile. And I think that's, those are the businesses can always sustain throughout the history. If you go back to BlackBerry example, like, you know, invented the first smart iPhone, but just stop right there. The iPhone, I'm saying, the smartphones, but stop right there, not, you know, reinventing of BlackBerry of its own technology. You're creating an opportunity for the companies out there to come up a better idea, and eventually you get outdated. And I think that's the key of the success in any leader of the companies or visionary of the companies, because, you know, it's got to be continuously, you know, I say this words for everywhere else, the best competition is with your own. So you have to compete your yesterday's version or last year's, the version of technology this year. Otherwise, somebody else is going to compete. Somebody is going to come up with that idea.
So was it an easy step for you to take then?
Basically, in 2019, in April, I just decided that I want to quit and a couple months of, you know, about a 6 month of relaxing and just putting my own thoughts together. And I approached the venture capital and investors and share my ideas and put them together, the business plans and set a little drilling and like the idea. And the CEO of the Citadel Drilling, Dan Hoffert, he has been previously in the business industry of managed pressure drilling. So he understood and he got into the same vision. He liked the idea. And then we started working together. So basically, we got the first tranche of the investment to invent and design that technology. And then I pulled together the team of five and six at the beginning, mechanical designers and so on, and electrical and automation software, and start putting together the first version of the technology and put on the plans to stagger the new inventions and deploy to the field one by one rather than all together. So we can mature the each part of technology, such as, you know, we built the first traditional technology with the automated software by testing the software first. So when we know that when the PMD comes, the new next generation design, we don't have to worry about the software side of it because it's already the field proven. And then we went to the next automation electrical side. And then finally, when we had that hardware designed, we launched that. And then once it's all, of course, we went through tough days. I'm not going to say that it all worked done on the first shot, but, you know, we made it better every day and by using it in the field. And thanks to those clients that who, you know, bought into the same vision and technology, that they gave us the opportunity to make that happen in there and with, by, you know, using us and helping us and providing us the feedback and guidance that, you know, how it helps their business, how it helps their operations. And today we were almost 100 people at Opal Energy and operating two different countries and drilling, you know, five different fields right now. And we're the first IoT, Internet of Things company and technology of the drilling industry, I want to say. We're doing great. I'm pretty happy with today's, you know, situation with my company, my team, and our performance. So we've been, you know, changing up the market quite significantly. Like in Western Texas right now, the wells that used to be drilled 18 days, we're achieving about a 9 to 10 days right now. So cutting off and shaving off about a 8 to 9 days by, you know, implementing the performance drilling with our technology.
Okay. So was it easy to get sponsorship then?
The sponsorship, you mean the investment part of it?
Yeah, please.
No, it's definitely not easy to raise an investment, especially what's that called? Energy sector, and as it's pretty fluctuating on investment side, you know, it gets put on hold and then it goes back and you know, what I mean is like booming and non-booming time, it's all completely different. It needs to be significantly a unique and a promising technology just to be able to raise the investment. And of course, You have to have that synergy with your investor that, you know, he understands the business and he gets that, you know, understands the vision along with the just the technology. So I don't think so. It's easy. And I know that, you know, there's a number of people out there have tried. Of course, you know, everyone has different reason of failure. It's either the technology or the leader himself or the team or so on. But it needs such a hard work to be able to make it happen. You have to be a confident. You have to be, I mean, especially in our case, you know, the question is like, how sure you are? Well, I'm not sure because nobody has done it. We're going to try first time. So how can I be sure? And you're asking investors to cut the check for that. So it needs a pretty good of a convincing skills and confident yourself to be able to deliver that vibe. Otherwise, and but you have to tell the transparent and build that integrity as well that, you know, they understand, yeah, nobody has tried it, but we believe we will.
Okay. So you have to, so having confidence in yourself is key then.
Definitely. I mean, in any other business or any other, you know, the part of your career, the confidence is always the key. Not just for the investment part of it. I mean, it needs to be a managed, risk managed confidence. So you can't be crazy and just like, you know, doing the things that it's impossible and you can't achieve and you have no idea how to achieve, but at least, you know, it doesn't mean that it has to be done before, but at least you have to be able to balance and make plans and have plan A's, plan B's and plan C's and for everything. I mean, and then show and deliver that with confidently.
Is it important to have a backup plan in business though?
Always. And I think it's important to have a backup plan in our own lives too. So, because nothing always goes with how we calculate and measure it. So the reality sometimes is you have to pivot. You have to be agile in your career, school or work or, you know, anything.
Okay. Do you really think that though?
I think, you know, like I said, of course, I mean, if you want to achieve and be successful in, you know, of course you always have to be.
Okay. Okay.
I'm not saying that we should be crazy and just, you know, over exaggerate the things and just to have a backup plans in our life for the things that doesn't need to have, but at least, you know, you're making decisions. You have to have a backup decision. So what if it doesn't work out? Then what's my plan? Okay, I'll try this. Those kind of stuff.
Okay. But then some people say that if you have a backup plan, you can always sometimes be working on the backup plan instead of putting your 100% into your plan A.
Well, I think it's the maturity level. So, I mean, you believe in plan A, but when you put the plan B together, it doesn't mean that you're not going to execute the plan A with 100% efficiency or with the focus and attention. So you still have to, because, you know, plan B is never better than the plan A. You have to put your 100% to make the plan A happen, that you would never need the plan B.
Okay. And do you think it's hard to do then?
It definitely requires, you know, maturity and skill and expertise and habit, I want to call it, right? To be able to, you know, still plan for the B and have the plan A to be 100%, you know, you put your attention focus. But yeah, it's definitely, it's definitely how the business runs, at least.
Okay. That's really good advice, actually. So what else would you like to achieve in your career?
What else I would like to achieve in my career? Well, at the moment, you know, we're focused on a growth at Opal Energy. So we're continuing doing that, and that's the short term goals that we have, and other than that, I think the life will show what's going to happen the next. But in my career, same along with that. So of course, you know, the position I'm taking, which is president and founder and leader of the company, it's never ending challenge. So I want to lead the company better than yesterday. So that's my career goal.
That's a really good career goal, actually. I really like that, actually. So what keeps you motivated when times get tough?
Individually or, you know, corporately. So, I mean, there was a really couple of key advices. I mean, when I started the company by the investors or the board of directors, there's going to be tough days and for yourself and for your team. And the best way to get out of that is, you know, how you bond together is the company culture. Just like how every family has its own culture, how you eat the supper and how you enter the house, how you clean the things and how you put your dishes away. Every house has its own culture. Every family has its own culture. It has to be exactly the same way in the company. How you work together, how you manage the challenging situations, how you manage the stressful, you know, the moments within the company, you know, when the things doesn't work operational wise or technology wise. So what we did absolutely that, you know, best at Opla that it still, you know, carries along and attracted a lot of people to join us was the culture. Our culture is WISE. It stands for the we, first W sign from the WISE is we and unity, integrity and innovation, and safety square, which is mentally and physically. So excellence is the last. So, you know, united, integrity, team that has accountable manner, professional, trustworthy manner, and innovating the technology, continuously innovates. The innovation doesn't really mean the only patent. So, you know, you do something with Excel today, it took it 6 hours. You need to start thinking that how I can do tomorrow within 4 hours this. Where how can I automate? How can I innovate this process? And it goes to every different aspect of the business, like finance and HR and QHSC and operations and well engineering, R&D engineering, manufacturing, bare maintenance, like, you know, pretty much everywhere else. So the innovation is the key for success. And of course, you know, transparency and integrity and united team and then we call it we. I think there's no another company that has a core value called we, because it's never I. We were aware of that. You know, we're doing a startup. We're on the same boat. We're sailing. So no one is going to be hero here if it sinks. Like, you know, 5 or 7, you know, or 100 people working on that boat to make it happen from A to B point. And if it doesn't make it to the B, there's not going to be a one person saying, but I did good. Well, the result is bad. So we're all failed. So it's we, it's not I. And creating that habit and creating that culture had given quite a bit of a success rate, and I've been talking about the culture on all podcasts and everywhere else that I attend, and that's, you know, yeah, we have 8 groups of patents disturbing and disrupting technology and the most innovative technologies. We've number of awards last year. We won the 2 Spotlight Awards and CIO Awards in IT technology side of it, and Spotlight in a OTC, Offshore Technology Conference, which is the mecca of oil and gas, that where it gets spotlight on new technologies. And we won on a 50th year of the OTC, the 2 awards at the same time. That has never happened in the last 50 years. So usually 1 award per company, and we got 2 awards last year. One was for software, one was for the hardware side. And just recently, we were top 10 innovators of the Darcy Partners Group and so on. And it just continues on, and those awards. But now where I was trying to say is, the more than those, what excites me the most and makes me the proud most is the culture of the company. Not the words and technologies and success and tough days that we went through, the COVID time and so on. And I think those can be achieved by another group, by another team, if it wasn't us. But that the culture that we built that attracted like a chain bonding, you know, and then collecting that, you know, the skilled people and genuine people and genius people around was the culture. And I've heard myself a number of times, you know, when people joined Opla, that, you know, I was hearing about the culture, and that was what excited me. I wanted to be part of that. So I think that is a very key for the success. And it is the key when you look back and everywhere in our life. So it's the key for it to be a family. It's key for it to be a friend, because the culture is needed. So if you don't have the culture, that's where the things fall apart.
Do you think it's easy to create a good culture in your organization?
It's not easy. Definitely, it's not easy. I'll tell you why. Because repeating the same habit is never easy. And doing that with a multidimensional company and multiple people and everybody, all the leaders, all the vice presidents, all the executives and board of directors and managers, it does a ripple effect, right? So no one should break that chain so you can deliver from bottom to top, top to bottom, the same culture. It's definitely a tough and understanding of the importance of culture is very important every level, so they understand that, okay, we got to keep this habit, because if I break this habit, the one below me will never care, and that's where the culture is going to break down, and then the thing's going to, we're going to start thinking differently, like one side of my team is going to go to the left, the other side is going to go right, so we need to proceed, you know, forward, and we need to be on the same mindset. We need to be able to we can be a different people and different personalities, but it should be all around the common goal, and only way to, you know, have that common goal is the culture. So it is tough, and it needs a integrity within the team to be able to implement. And there are companies out there, and you know, I've met with a lot of the, you know, friends and so on, say, hey, I work for XLTD. It's like, hey, what's your core values? He's like, I don't even know if you have core value. Well, let's look it up. We pull the phone and type, it does have a core value. But the person who works there for 5 years doesn't even know what's the core value of the company or culture of the company, because it's just written, not implemented.
Do you think a lot of companies do just have core values that they just are written down instead of implementing it?
100%. It just became the famous thing at some point. I don't know when. And, you know, if you go to and type up any company and just, you know, anything that any company just comes into your mind, the first, just go into Google and type XLTD or X company's core values or culture, you'll find something to read about it. But if you just ping on a people that works there for 10 years saying that, hey, what do you think about the company culture? There's going to be company and employees will say, well, I don't even know if you have one. There are a lot of companies out there, and there are a lot of families and individuals out there, like they just don't understand the importance of the culture themselves, right? So, but it's the key success for the startups. That's what I would tell. I mean, that's what I learned in my own career.
It's important to have a really good company culture for a startup. Why does it make a difference?
Like I said, it just bonds the, you know, the key employees that, you know, who funded the company together, and then they can get across the table and achieved for the same goal, and then continue attracting the outside, because, you know, you can build the best technology, you can offer more money at the beginning, but don't forget, you're just 10 people company, you're competing with the 1,000 people, you know, employee counts of companies, and you know, at the beginning, everybody says, why should I leave this big company and go for a small company to work? And then, you know what? What's the worst? If you attract them with more salary, because they will get attracted with the more salary somewhere else. And then you can't afford that, because, you know, you're a startup. So you continuously have to grow, and you have to keep the head count steady with the people that you can count on. So, and the best way to attract them is your culture. That's why it's a very, very key for success for startups.
Okay. That's really insightful, actually. Because is it really hard for a startup to retain their key personnel?
Of course. I mean, it's. I mean, you look back, and just not from my own experience, but by reading, you know, and educating ourselves. Yeah, of course. There's bad examples, there are good examples. So to detain the key personnel is, you know, it just doesn't make it seem the feeling. So of course, you know, they're the one that, you know, visioned all this together. So, I mean, it's always good to have the same people around that, you know, even, you know, if you join a company that, you know, has done a groundbreaking, you know, groundbreaking technology, and then you want to know who's the inventor, and when you can have an access to talk to those people, it makes you feel as a new employee a completely different thing, right?
Yeah, I agree, actually. I do agree. So I'm going to ask you a question. Do you have any advice for any new graduates coming into the energy sector?
I think the best advice I can give it is in energy sector. I think it's the best sector, you know, I'm known of, and it's so much of a connected sector that everybody, you know, supports each other, and then, you know, you actually enjoy while you work versus some other sectors that I got. I mean, I have never worked with different sectors, so it's not a perfect comparison, but I got that, you know, friends and families who works in different sectors that I talk, it's, I don't feel the same thing. They're enjoying the same way that we are enjoying in the energy sector, because we're so much connected, we're so much supportive in the energy sector, and that's what makes it the most fun. I think, you know, the advice I want to give is they should enjoy their job. That's the most important part, and they should be proud of it, because we're bringing the power and energy to the world. So it's such a unique role to carry on along with the world's population, that, you know, I think without the energy sector, you know, I can't imagine the today's world.
That's really insightful, actually, and very good advice as well. I'm going to ask you one final question. If you could turn back time, would you change anything?
From my career perspective, I probably wouldn't. No, I'm pretty happy where I am, and I'm very happy that all my hard work that I've put it into my own career, and it's basically the investment. You know, you're actually, you know, you can't always expect that it's going to be the return value is going to be what you're imagining. So sometimes it's different. But you don't know what's the actual return value is going to be 3 years later, or 5 years later, or 10 years later, when today you do the hard work. So I'm pretty thankful and grateful for my own career. And I think that, you know, I've worked hard enough. I've contributed a lot to the industry, to the companies that I've worked for. And, you know, I'm all the publications and researches and hard works that I've done, I think has been valued and is going to be get valued. And I'm pretty grateful what I've had. So really, no, I wouldn't change anything.
Excellent. I'm glad you wouldn't, actually, because it sounds like you've had an amazing career.
Thank you very much.
Okay, that's all the questions I have today. I would like to thank Alvin for your time. That brings us to the end of another episode. Thanks for listening, and see you next week. That brings us to the end of another episode. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, I'd like to gently encourage you to leave a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts and share the show with another person. You can also follow me on LinkedIn or via my website, www.michellefraserconsultancy.com. Thanks again for listening, and see you next week.